Information is free.
The law?
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care.
Appear to border
and it shows.
The law?
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Lied to
the government knew they were innocent.
They have no idea what they're up against.
Universal mind control is calling your name, my friends. Welcome to episode 103 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster. December 12th, 2008, coming to you from the Portland Radio Authority and the Revere Radio Network. Tons of horrible news to go over. It's Black Obama, Chicago corruption, and Operation Board Games. Police state panopticon, econo crash in the next depression, 9/11 updates in World War III watch, possession, predictions, Bush and the Bible, more mind control, musical torture, riot brigades, and the military versus California. So much to go over. So much is going on in the world. It's episode 103, December 12th, 2008, MediaMonarchy.com.
Salut à tous, ceci est une introduction à un nouvel espace, une nouvelle era, un nouveau son. Bienvenue, vous entrez à Universal Mind Control.
Hey, that's all they wanna do. Get it. I stay fresh like a wrapped in plastic. Beat those plastic, see galactic. Southside more, we Cadillac-ic. Charismatic, Asiatic. I hustle for mathematics. Cameras, action, change status. Actor, tap your favorite actress. Gucci, rockin', Gucci, poppin'. Movie, watchin', booties, choppin'. Body, movin', showin', proving, stylin', and being fly. I touch the masses like a Catholic. Dismiss the rap shit, my future's backlit. In the act with the cat who matches stacks. My vernacular traps, y'all react, so let's go.
This is that new shit, keep his hand in his mind. That universal mind control, now move your behind. You know you like it, it's calling your name. Nigga, this is that new shit, and it don't feel the same. It's got that dang, 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 dang.
Some pop, some lock, some move robotic. Like cash money, I stay in pocket. UMC, rock, don't stop it. Six exotic, mix hypnotic. Superhero robot, I'm bionic. You a fan on some level, I'm a supersonic. Girl, you got it, you can strip like comic. Entrance to melodic, technotronic. Beats, rocking, seats, dropping, seats, dropping. Streets, rocking, freaking, shaking. Money, making, styling, and being fly. I'm the one the lady chose to strip and pose to. Take off their clothes to, chose to. The one that go coast to coast to Mr. Global Focal. Let's go,
This is that new shit. Keep your hand in your mind. That universal mind control. Now move your behind. You know you like it. It's calling your name. Nigga, this is that new shit. And it don't feel the same. It's got that dang, 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 dang.
Never been afraid. Fresh and I'm getting paid. The future of this age. From the shot, so I talk this way. Twist the hate at the grandma day. Rock the fly shit like every day. To the top and I'm on my way. Let's go.
This is that new shit. Keep your hand in your mind. That universal mind control. Now move your behind. You know you like it. It's calling your name. Nigga, this is
This is that new shit. Calling Your Name. That's brand new music from Common, the title track from his new record, Universal Mind Control. We're always talking about mind control here on Media Monarchy. Once again, let me tell you, my name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, coming to you live, as always, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and Sunday nights at 7, revereradio.net. And, of course, big thanks to 93.9 KBFR in Boulder, Colorado, blasting out Media Monarchy for you, as well as Ground Zero Radio in Atlanta. And, of course, I implore you, as always, to make contact, reach out, and touch someone like me, with FaceSpace and YouTube and Yahoo and IM and Skype and all that, with Media Monarchy as your keyword. And of course, iTunes, radioforall.net, and archive.org is where you can get the podcast. 150-some downloads of last week's episode 102 right now and counting, so thank you very much, returning listeners, for spreading the word of Media Monarchy. And to new listeners, welcome aboard. I'm glad to have you. And there's so much to go over. So much to go over. It's going to be a little messy, this episode. I'm going to cram in a lot. Otherwise, I'll never work my way out of the massive, massive mounds of news. Let me mention a couple interesting personal notes I'll throw out real quick. You heard me mention a couple months ago that I finally switched my work shift. So for the full, or rather the previous 2 years of Media Monarchy, I had been working the graveyard shift, 11 p.m. to 7 a.m., and I had kind of built the way I worked on the website and the radio show around that schedule. 2 months ago, that changed, and I went to daytime. And now my schedule is a little more normal, and it allows me to do and see things I wouldn't normally do sleeping in the daytime. So the first one was at the store the other day, and again, now I'm in the store in the daytime when it's open and I see people and customers and all kinds of things. I'd noticed and seen him around and know that he lives on Alberta, but Chris Walla, the guitarist and producer from Death Cab for Cutie, comes into the store a bit. And I've seen him before from afar, but the other day I ran into him face to face, and of course, being the chatty McGee that I am, instantly said, "Dude, it's good to see you in here. We met at the Black Cat in Washington, D.C. in November 2001. And he was, "What?" Which, of course, Death Cab long outgrew the smallish D.C. club, the Black Cat, a long time ago. So name-dropping, meeting him at the Black Cat gave me old school, so to speak, cred. And he was super nice. Introduced his girlfriend to me and was just an awesome guy. So I basically made friends with Chris Walla of Death Cab. So he's awesome. The other awesome thing is, a projectionist friend of mine got in the copy of Slumdog Millionaire early last week. And so we were literally the first people, if not just Oregon, but probably a lot of other places, that got to see Danny Boyle's fantastic new film, Slumdog Millionaire. Danny Boyle, of course, the filmmaker of Trainspotting and 28 Days Later, but you should also check out his fantastic movies like Millions, or Shallow Grave, or Sunshine. So, Slumdog Millionaire is fantastic. I believe it scored a Golden Globe nomination for Best Picture this morning. And it, of course, is set in Mumbai, which is, of course, quite timely now with all that's going on there. So, those are my couple of interesting media personal notes. And that's the good news. Because from here on out, it's mostly bad news. And what's posted at the top of the page right now, as I believe I've told you before, I basically will bookmark stories, put them in folders according to category, and post them up. Sometimes the folders grow large and large and large, and it's hard to keep up. And sometimes what I have to do is basically just post all the links up, without any pictures or bells and whistles. News purge, information overload. We're going to go over quickly relatively. I don't know how quick I can do anything. Obamasiah, Police State International, the Econo Crash, Ron Paul, 9/11 updates, and World War III Watch. So, let's hit. First off, from CNN, and it's basically a review of the new record from MC Common. Obama will change hip-hop, Common says. And so, the crazy conspiracy theorist in me says, huh, that sure is interesting that your new record is called Universal Mind Control. Now, I was talking to my man DJ Cliff, who precedes me here on the Portland Radio Authority, myspace.com/DJ Cliff, K-L-Y-P-H, and he pointed out, and of course the electro sound, he said he thinks the Universal Mind Control hook is actually a rip and a reference on Africa Bambaataa. So I missed that. So thank you, DJ Cliff. Interestingly enough, anyway, Universal Mind Control, and that's not the first, or rather that is the first, but it won't be the last reference to musical mind control that we're going to hit in this episode. But moving down the list of Obamasiah updates from crooksandliars.com, and this was on the Chris Matthews show, where they basically said Obama's problems aren't going to come from the GOP, they're going to come from the angry left. Again, setting the stage for homegrown terrorism and white al-Qaeda. And of course, it'll be militias and all that bullshit we saw in the 90s all over again. Israel has faith in Team Obama. That's from Global Research. Eric Holder had a role in the cover-up of the murder of Trentadue in Oklahoma City. This is the large case of, now I'm confusing their names, Jesse Trentadue is the brother of the deceased Kenneth Michael Trentadue, who was basically beaten to death in jail because he was mistaken for someone who was another accomplice in the Oklahoma City bombing. So Eric Holder, the new attorney general, of course, all these guys always have had their hands in nice little cover-ups. It's a way to show the gangsters that, you know, you're one of them. And as we'll see, the gangsters can pull the rug out from under you at any time. The first mention of this is from a week or so ago, Hillary Clinton ineligible for Secretary of State. And of course, they've fixed that problem, and I'll explain it to you in just a moment. Again, this list is chronological but not thematic, so we'll be jumping around a little bit. So bear with me. It's all here. It's all linked up. Do the research. Check it. Supreme Court will reject Obama citizen case. That's a video for you, and of course, they were correct. Tiny crowd prays Supreme Court will invalidate Obama presidency. That's from Raw Story. There was an interesting op-ed in the New York Times from the one and only weatherman terrorist, William Ayers. And as I was flipping through the Tuesday, December 9th edition of the New York Times, I was looking at the letters column, and there are people writing in about the Bill Ayers editorial called The Real Bill Ayers by William Ayers. So as I was reading some of the comments, where fortunately most people pointed out that what Ayers refers to as symbolic acts and aimed only to educate, of course, were violent things that, of course, in this day and age would be called terrorism. And the one thing that caught my eye as I hold the New York Times here in my hand, there was a letter written in that basically, of course, pointed out that blowing shit up is not a symbolic act. And it was a scathing letter, and it was written by a guy named Ronald Radosh, R-A-D-O-S-H, from Martinsburg, West Virginia, which, of course, is just the town away from where I moved from, Shepherdstown, West Virginia, in the Eastern Panhandle. But apparently, he's a writer and professor emeritus at history at CUNY and is an adjunct senior fellow at the Hudson Institute. So, I don't know if my man lives in Martinsburg and commutes to New York, but I'm going to have to look that guy up. See if we got any West Virginia connections. So, you can, of course, read that whole article, The Real Bill Ayers by William Ayers. It's up on the New York Times. Obama, the new presidential slumlord for America's rich, opednews.com. Decision on Obama's citizenship pending, that's from Rogue Government. The election of the greatest con man in recent history, Global Research. Danger Room, of course, points out that Obama may keep Michael Hayden, the chief of the CIA, and they do note it with ugh. Court won't review Obama's eligibility to serve. SCOTUS won't hear challenge to Obama's citizenship. That's from McClatchy. Obama and the world crisis, again from Global Research, referencing, of course, Michael Hayden again. The Hayden record, condoning torture, destroying evidence, and misleading Congress, from thinkprogress.org. Chicago Sun-Times has Obama saying, don't stock up on guns. Don't worry. I won't take your guns. Unless, of course, we have some catalyzing event. Liberals voice concerns about Obama. That's from Politico and Yahoo. Court won't review Obama's citizenship, from the Washington Times. SCOTUS dismisses appeal on Obama's citizenship. That's from Wikinews. McClatchy has an op-ed, time to get over Obama birth rumor. PDA director discourages liberals from attacking Obama. That's a video from Raw Replay. Another video and a quick clip that we're going to hear is the Obamasiah meeting with Al Gore. And they're, of course, mentioning that global warming is a national security concern.
We got everybody in here?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, let me start off. Like the rest of the people of Illinois, I am saddened and sobered by the news that came out of the U.S. Attorney's Office today. As this is an ongoing investigation involving the governor, I don't think it will be appropriate for me to comment on the issue at this time. The purpose of this meeting here today was to listen and learn from Vice President Al Gore on the extraordinary work that he has done around the issue of climate change. All three of us, I think, are in agreement that the time for delay is over. The time for denial is over. We all believe what the scientists have been telling us for years now, that this is a matter of urgency and national security. And it has to be dealt with in a serious way. That's what I intend my administration to do.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's climate change, not global warming, of course, because it's not global. Because, of course, we know that the sun is heating up and is melting caps on Mars. Not the moon, Mars. Your SUV isn't doing that. Your SUV sucks, and it's a bunch of bullshit, and it's a gas guzzler. But as long as they can get you to ask the wrong questions, they don't have to worry about what the answer is. Now, of course, at the beginning, the Obamasiah let the cat out of the bag there about, of course, the arrest of the governor of Illinois. And we're going to get to that in just a moment. But first, the last couple of headlines under the Obamasiah news purge. Obama aims to reboot U.S. image in the Muslim world. That's from The Guardian. And I believe he has, without saying it explicitly, taking up Ralph Nader's challenge to go visit the Middle East. Wrapping up the story about Hillary and her Secretary of State position. So the article from the AP now. Clinton to earn about $4,700 less than Rice. Hillary would make about $4,700 less as Secretary of State than her predecessor, Condoleezza Rice. Congress late Wednesday lowered the salary for the nation's top diplomat to keep Clinton's nomination from running afoul of the Constitution. An obscure section on compensation for public officials, the Emoluments Clause, says that no member of Congress can be appointed to a government post if that job's pay was increased during the lawmaker's current term. In other words, Clinton, Democrat from New York, carpetbagger, might have been ineligible to serve in the post because she was serving in Congress when Rice's salary was raised. So now they had to lower it to make her constitutionally legal. Jesus, if that was the only constitutional problem we have with the coming criminal cabinet, it wouldn't be so bad. Raw Story, of course, points out that Obama will nuke Iran if Israel is nuked. And, of course, Tehran retaliated verbally. This from the AFP. Of course, pointing out that Obama's nuclear remark was cowboy talk. Cowboy talk, huh? Well, we're kind of used to that, aren't we? Now, my friends, let's get right into Blagojevich. Illinois governor arrested for trying to sell Obama's Senate seat. This broke Tuesday, December 9th. Now, as I note at the top of this massive posting, the Chicago machine's corruption has hit the fan. As Webster Tarpley predicted, this twisted tale of Operation Board Games that, of course, has connections to Resco and Ouchy and possibly Bankster's Revenge. So if you don't understand all that, hold on just a second. As I reach down and open up my personal copy of Barack H. Obama, The Unauthorized Biography by the one and only Webster Tarpley. Tarpley's put out two books about Obama this year. Early in the year, he had Obama, The Postmodern Coup, and then it was quickly followed up this summer by Barack H. Obama, The Unauthorized Biography. Tarpley, of course, noted among many, many other things, wrote George Bush, The Unauthorized Biography, about Poppy Bush, the main expose on Poppy Bush. So, when this scandal broke, when Governor Rod Blagojevich of Illinois was arrested, I just wondered if Webster Tarpley mentioned any of this early in the summer in his book. And wouldn't you know it, if you turn to page 179 of Barack H. Obama, The Unauthorized Biography, under the heading, The Illinois Bipartisan Combine, Mothership for Obama. At the center of this worldwide network of crime and intrigue, we find the one form of bipartisan political cooperation to which Obama is sincerely devoted. This sinister centerpiece is the bipartisan Illinois Combine, a continuing criminal enterprise under the definitions of the RICO statute, through which a gang of racketeers composed of elected officials of the Democratic and Republican parties have systematically looted and despoiled the public treasuries of the city of Chicago, Cook County, and the state of Illinois. In his specific capacity as a ward-healing machine hack political operative, Obama looks to this criminal bipartisan Illinois combine as his mothership. Due to the pervasive presence and overwhelming rapacity of the bipartisan Illinois combine, it may well be that Illinois and Chicago specifically represent the most filthy and corrupt jurisdictions anywhere in the United States today. How ironic that Obama, the self-styled angel of clean government, has chosen to climb out of this repulsive sewer. The working hypothesis of this book is that the Resco conviction, which may well be followed by similar convictions of Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich and of Chicago Mayor Daley, will not be used by Soros and the trilateral financiers to sabotage the candidacy of their own hand-picked bankster's boy during the 2008 contest. Again, this is being written this past summer. Tarpley rushed this book out pre-election. So, again, Tarpley, writing from earlier in this year. The working hypothesis of this book is that the Resco conviction, which may well be followed by similar convictions of Blagojevich and Daley, won't be used by Soros and the trilaterals during the election. This would, of course, represent a self-defeating exercise in futility, a contradiction in terms. It is instead likely as Operation Board Games, and that's the years-long investigation into the Chicago corruption. Operation Board Games. Two words, board games. It is instead likely as Operation Board Games represents a capability which will be kept in reserve for the future. Should it ever become necessary for the banking faction to remind the megalomaniac Obama about who is boss? If Barkey becomes too rambunctious, he can be threatened with indictment and incarceration using the testimony of his longtime crony Resco. Alternatively, Operation Board Games and the Resco conviction might be used as convenient detonation devices should the trilateral bankers ever feel the need to jettison their puppet in a big hurry. So there you have Tarpley pointing out this summer that, of course, the Chicago corruption is well documented and well investigated, but, of course, wouldn't have been used pre-election to sabotage the ascendancy of the Obamasiah, but can be kept in their back pocket to bust out at any point, and I believe they have. So let's take this tale from the beginning. We're going to go through all the updates, and then I'm going to play a nice long clip of several different pieces that will basically encapsulate it all and put it all together for you. So let's start out from the Washington Post. FBI agents on Tuesday morning, December 9th, arrested Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich. Blagojevich. I had to practice saying that name. It looks like Blagojevich. Blagojevich. FBI agents arrested Blagojevich and his chief of staff on conspiracy and bribery charges, including allegations that the governor was seeking to benefit financially from his appointment of a successor to the U.S. Senate seat that was vacated by President-elect Obama. The arrest of Blagojevich, 51, and his top aide, John Harris, 46, capped a lengthy investigation into public corruption at the highest levels of state government. The two men later appeared in federal courthouse in Chicago before U.S. Magistrate Judge Nan Nolan, who ordered the governor's release on $4,500 bond. Blagojevich appeared in court in sweatpants, gym shoes, and an athletic shirt, was ordered to relinquish his passport and his firearm owner's identification card. This is a sad day for government, U.S. Attorney Patrick J. Fitzgerald told a news conference explaining the charges. It's a very sad day for Illinois government. Governor Blagojevich has taken us to a truly new low. Blagojevich was arrested in the middle of a political corruption crime spree, Fitzgerald said, adding, "We acted to stop that crime spree." Now, there's a video report from thinkprogress.org. Chicago reporter suggests Rahm Emanuel may have tipped off federal investigators about Blagojevich, and of course that has the supposed lefty blogosphere all up in arms. However, let's jump to Cryptagon and let's get the day before Blagojevich was arrested. Blagojevich suspends state business with Bank of America and then is promptly arrested by the FBI on corruption charges. Less than 24 hours later, whammo. Not saying that the guy isn't a crook. He could be as crooked as the day is long, but the timing of his arrest, however, is priceless. And we'll get to that in the clip, where, of course, Blagojevich cut out Bank of America. So again, is this bankster's revenge? Reminding the middle management gangsters of who really runs the show. So there's a link, of course, to, I don't believe I've seen a full copy of the 76-page federal indictment, conspiracy to commit mail and wire fraud, and solicitation of bribery. However, let's jump to Kurt Nemo over on truthnews.us. Blagojevich arrested on corruption charges after going up against Bank of America. Isn't it odd that Illinois Governor Blagojevich is suddenly arrested on corruption charges the day after he announced he's asking all Illinois government agencies to suspend business with Bank of America? Is it odd? Not really. Blagojevich's arrest sends a strong signal that going up against the banksters will not be tolerated. Blagojevich contended that Bank of America received a multi-billion-dollar bailout from the government and should accordingly restore credit to the Republic Windows and Doors Company in Chicago. That written from Catherine Zaleski of the Huffington Post. And again, there are numerous links for you to get into and click into and dive into all the angles of this story and, of course, how it connects to the sit-in in Chicago and more and more. Of course, more videos of Obama being saddened and sobered by Blagojevich. Now the updates, which, of course, came and are coming fast and furious. So a lot of the basic articles, governor charged with trying to sell Obama's Senate seat, comes from the Deutsche Press Agency, as well as Time Magazine, their Swampland blog. We've got Obama's burden. Obama, of course, said he had no contact with the government in alleged seat sale scheme. I did not I did not have relations with that Blagojevich. That's from Raw Story. Obama said he had no contact. That's from Think Progress. And of course, Chris Floyd, the fantastic writer behind Empire Burlesque. Indecent Exposure, Blagojevich Case Strips the System Bare. And then even more updates a couple days later. Of course, more from the Washington Times. Current.com was caught censoring the Bank of America Blagojevich coincidence. That's from chartingstocks.net. Scandal cast cloud over Obama presidency from the Washington Times. And, of course, numerous calls that Obama says old Rod Blagojevich should resign from Think Progress, as well as numerous other places. McClatchy, of course, points out that the scandal creates a distraction for the Obama transition. An interesting clip, and we'll hear it. Representative Schakowsky said that she must not have been a serious Senate contender because Blagojevich didn't ask her for anything. Obama denies, again, discussing Senate successor with Blagojevich from Think Progress. Jesse Jackson Jr. denies involvement in the corruption scandal. We're going to hear that. Again, Obama calls on Blagojevich to resign from the Deutsche Press Agency and The Guardian. All 50 Democratic senators call on Blagojevich to resign. That's from Politico, and again, Think Progress. And the most recent update I have for you, Blagojevich ignores Obama's call to resign. And that's from the Associated Press. So, the only thing, as I look right now at Google News real quick, from the Washington Post 42 minutes ago, Obama worked to distance self from Blagojevich early on, but apparently not early enough. So, let's get into this massive clip, and I think it encapsulates the whole story for you. So here we go. It's Blagoy Obama, Chicago Corruption and Operation Board Games.
We have contacted all of our agencies across state government, and as of now, every agency has been ordered to suspend doing any business with the Bank of America. The Bank of America received $25 billion in taxpayer money as part of the financial bailout. This is exactly and precisely the kind of thing that isn't right when, on the one hand, powerful special interests get the help of taxpayer money to bail them out, the banks, and yet the purpose of that money was supposed to be to provide a line of credit to businesses like this to keep workers working and keep people employed, and yet the Bank of America has yet to step up and say that they're going to be helpful to this company and keep these workers working. So unless and until they do that, we, the state of Illinois, will suspend doing any business with the Bank of America. And we hope that this kind of leverage and pressure will encourage the Bank of America to do the right thing for this business, take some of that federal tax money that they've received and invest it by providing the necessary credit to this company so these workers can keep their jobs.
We begin this hour with breaking news. Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich has been taken into federal custody, charged with, among other things, trying to essentially sell the president-elect's soon-to-be-vacant Senate seat. The governor has the sole power to appoint a replacement, and the feds say they caught him soliciting bribes during more than one recorded phone call. And that's just one of the charges facing the governor, as well as his chief of staff, John Harris, who was also arrested. We're expecting the governor to appear in court later today. The U.S. Attorney's Office will hold a news conference at noon Eastern that will bring you live. So again, Rod Blagojevich, the Illinois governor, and his chief of staff arrested on federal corruption charges. Apparently, there was cooperation with this investigation. Started some 3 years ago, but apparently extended even through this past election when Barack Obama won the election, when the president-elect was first elected. Of course, that put the power by Rod Blagojevich, put it in his hands to name Barack Obama's replacement. And now what the feds are alleging is that the governor was soliciting bribes in order to name Barack Obama's replacement. They say that they have that on several phone calls, and so we're waiting to hear from the feds what those phone calls recorded. We know that Blagojevich and his chief of staff, John Harris, both arrested by FBI agents. Apparently, there was ongoing criminal activity, according to the feds, that they had conspired to get personal financial benefits for the governor by leveraging the fact that he has sole authority to name Barack Obama's replacement to the Senate. They say that he had threatened to withhold substantial state assistance to, for instance, a newspaper company in connection with the sale of Wrigley Field.
Current.com user Alita announces, Illinois governor taken into federal custody. Democrat Rod Blagojevich and his chief of staff were arrested on corruption and solicitation of bribery charges. In addition to trading President-elect Obama's Senate seat for lucrative placement on corporate boards for he or his wife, Blagojevich was reportedly also soliciting campaign donations in exchange for state contracts and denying state assistance in selling Wrigley Field until writers critical of him at the Chicago Tribune were fired. See Lund Commons for Illinois, it's the best of times and the worst of times. We have one governor still in jail, George Ryan, looking to commute his sentence. But hey, it's Illinois, and we're kinda used to this.
In this particular situation, we have a seated governor, and, you know, they all were, the last governor was in December, 5 years ago, with George Ryan. You know, they talk about it, do it in December, send them home over the holidays, let them look at their kids and their wife, think about maybe making a deal sometime in January.
What it seems to suggest, Tom, is that his inner circle was growing smaller and smaller and smaller. And we did receive a tip this morning that perhaps all of this came together so quickly because the governor may have reached out to Rahm Emanuel, President-elect's chief of staff, in attempting to leverage filling the Senate seat. And it may have been Rahm Emanuel who tipped the scale and made this move as quickly as it did.
And then with that thought too, Tom, just everything I'm seeing right now, I'm going across the wires and checking everything out, I'm seeing the picture of the president-elect Barack Obama shaking hands with the governor. And that perception, just publicity-wise, how do you think that's going to affect that sort of dealings and the way people look at the president-elect?
Well, I think the president-elect is above and beyond this, but unfortunately, within a few blocks of where his president-elect office is where the governor is probably being currently held right now, within a couple blocks. So the two of them are, you know, neighbors right now. One is about to go to the White House, the other one is about to go to the big house.
I want to address rumors and reports about me and my involvement in this process. I want to make this fact plain. I reject and denounce pay-to-play politics and have no involvement whatsoever in any wrongdoing. I did not initiate or authorize anyone at any time to promise anything to Governor Blagojevich on my behalf. I never sent a message or an emissary to the governor to make an offer, to plead my case, or to propose a deal about a U.S. Senate seat, period. I thought, mistakenly, that the process was fair, above board and on the merits.
WGN's Julie Unruh was there when the governor was brought in. Julie.
Good evening, Micah and Mark. Governor Blagojevich and his administration have been under investigation for about 3 years. Today's charges, we're told, stem from more recent alleged criminal activity, however. It revolves around a vacated U.S. Senate seat, the attempted firing of a Tribune editor, as well as pay-to-play politics like we've seen all too recently in the state of Illinois.
Governor Blagojevich has taken us to a truly new low.
U.S. Attorney Patrick Fitzgerald did not mince his words as he announced 51-year-old Rahm Blagojevich had been charged with conspiracy to commit mail and wire fraud and solicitation of bribery. Another governor from Illinois charged with political corruption. At 6 a.m. today, the governor was picked up at his home. At 1:30 p.m., he stood before a federal judge, still wearing his jogging clothes. He said hardly a word before his own security detail whisked him out through a private exit at the Dirksen Federal Building. But his attorney, Sheldon Sarosky, shared this outside.
He feels that he didn't do anything wrong, and that he hopes the people in Illinois have faith with him, he will be vindicated.
Earlier today, a Fed federal prosecutor said Blagojevich, in his most appalling acts, tried to sell the U.S. Senate seat vacated by President-elect Barack Obama. He says the governor was recently caught saying this.
It's a bleeping valuable thing. You just don't give it away for nothing. Close quote. Another quote, I've got this thing, and it's bleeping golden. I'm just not giving it up for bleeping nothing.
And there's more. Fitzgerald says Blagojevich squeezed the Children's Memorial Hospital CEO. $8 million in stick money for the facility in exchange for $50,000. When the campaign contribution never came, Blagojevich allegedly wanted to kill the deal. He also said the governor was on his home phone with an advisor recently. They were talking about getting a Chicago Tribune editor fired, someone who had been critical of the governor.
In the governor's words, quote, fire all those bleeping people, get them the bleep out of there, and get us some editorial support. Close quote. Yeah.
In the 76-page affidavit, an angry Patty Blagojevich, Illinois' first lady, chimed in on that same conversation. The governor was scheming with his now co-defendant, John Harris, to withhold state money from the Tribune Company, money that would help with Wrigley Field. They weren't going to give it up unless Tribune fired some folks. Mrs. Blagojevich said the governor needed, quote, to hold up that bleeping Cubs bleep. Bleep them.
This wiretap, I can tell you, from the FBI agents that participated in this wiretap investigation, were thoroughly disgusted and revolted by what they heard. And I think even the most cynical agents in our office were shocked.
Blagojevich has not indicated that he plans to step down as governor, and at this time he still had the power to appoint someone that vacated U.S. Senate seat. U.S. Attorney Patrick Fitzgerald simply hopes that whatever happens will simply be done now in the light of day. Governor Blagojevich and his co-defendant are next expected back here in court on January 14th.
Bleep you, you Chicago gangsters. Now, I guess I forgot the clip of Illinois Representative Schakowsky saying that I guess I was never actually a serious contender for Obama's Senate seat because Blagojevich didn't ask me for anything. But those several clips, I think, break it down pretty well for you. And it's what's been said. Again, what more can I say about it? But the links are all there, and of course, I'm sure we'll be covering this more. Blagoy Obama, Chicago corruption, and Operation Board Games. It's Chicago gangsters. It may as well be Capone. They're not Tommy gunning people in a Valentine's Day massacre, but they do it with a pen. Bleep you. Jumping to the Police State International subheading on the News Purge Information Overload. I'm going to have to hurry up. Hatfill anthrax documents released. That's from the Washington Post. Top DHS Immigration and Customs Enforcement official. You know what she does? She hires illegals.
But our winner, Lorraine Henderson of Salem, Massachusetts. She's a regional director of Homeland Security, Customs, and Border Protection. Her primary responsibility, keeping illegal aliens from entering this country through the Port of Boston. Ms. Henderson has been arrested for hiring a series of illegal aliens, at least three of them, to clean her own home. Elevating this base irony to biblical proportions, she's charged under one of those new xenophobic laws that were established along with the Patriot Act and the Department of Homeland Security, encouraging her Brazilian housekeeper to stay in the country illegally by paying her. Lorraine Henderson, for the moment, still the Boston Regional Director of Homeland Security.
And of course, she is one of the worst people in the world. New World Order being taught in schools. That's from blacklistednews.com. Hopping robots display pack instinct. From CNET.com. Drone to keep watch on U.S.-Canada border. That's from Danger Room. It must be 1984 because Big Brother snoops and Brits don't care. That's from McClatchy. That aforementioned drone has landed in North Dakota in preparation for Border Patrol. That's from Breitbart.com. A censorship note from the BBC. Fake Simpsons cartoon is porn. 20 state driver's license use facial recognition technology. That's a video from Raw Replay, and of course, Oregon is one of the 20. A great article called The Panopticon Economy from the San Antonio Current. The Panopticon Economy, the NSA's new data mining facility, is one component of a growing surveillance industry. And you should, of course, look up the origins and definitions of the term panopticon. Seeing all. It was originally an idea, I believe, several centuries ago by a guy named Bentham that was basically a design for a prison where you were never sure if you were being watched, but you were pretty sure you were being watched all the time. the Panopticon economy. Air Force seeks non-lethal city stopper. That's from InformationWeek.com. Chinese dissidents get sent to the mental ward. From the International Herald Tribune, and I saw it in the New York Times in print, that basically dissidents get picked up and put in the loony bin. You don't like tyrannical world government? You must be crazy. There's a video of the ongoing Masonic chip program from roguegovernment.com. Gates' memo announces final assimilation of the National Guard and the Reserve. Of course, Robert Gates staying on because he needs to complete his job of destroying posse comitatus with combat brigades on the streets of the United States. Finally, under the Police State International heading, ammunition accountability. And maybe we'd better take this bill seriously. But remember, Obama says don't stock up on guns. Don't worry. Don't worry about your bitter beliefs. Under the Econo Crash heading, which basically dovetails with resource wars anymore, it's going to be about food. SWAT team holds family at gunpoint for hours, from digitaljournal.com. Repair Rhode Island roads with more tolls, taxes, and fees, projo.com. Milwaukee neighborhoods could print their own money, from the Chicago Tribune. SWAT team conducts food raid in rural Ohio. That's the one that goes along with the SWAT team holding a family at gunpoint for hours. Food raid in rural Ohio. Tying back into Black Obama and the Bank of America and the bankster's revenge, angry laid-off workers occupy factory in Chicago, of course, from the Associated Press. The feds approve a Chinese bank to open offices in the U.S. How you like that? The father of the Amero, Herbert Grubel, G-R-U-B-E-L, speaks about, of course, the coming common North American currency. Most often referred to as the Amero. Financial Times editor admits agenda for dictatorial world government. This came from the Financial Times, one of the most respected and widely read newspapers on the planet. They had an editorial called "And Now for World Government." And of course, again, they're just putting it all out in our faces because they can't hide it anymore. They've set it all up. They just kind of have to announce it to us now. And of course, he later backpedaled on his story and wouldn't go on the radio, wouldn't talk to Alex Jones or Paul Joseph Watson, didn't want to talk about his big world government story. NPR layoffs looming. That's from MediaBistro.com. National food stamp surge amplified in West Virginia, unfortunately. My poor home state always gets poorer. And finally, under the Econo Crash head, from the New York Times, from their Deal Book blog, and again, in your face, it's not from conspiracy sites, the big three for Wall Street's New World Order. The New World Order doesn't exist. You're crazy if you say it exists. But it's good. A couple Ron Paul notes. With about 1,400 days or so until Election Day 2012, Ron Paul ponders another run. That's from the LA Times. He, of course, warned that the U.S. will support its handmaiden, or I don't know who's the handmaiden, us or Israel, but of course that the U.S. will support Israel on an attack on Iran. He warns of secret plans to create an international central bank. Of course, pointing that it's on its way, and there are many videos and many links and many editorials for you to hit in these Ron Paul headings. Gun control, protecting terrorists and despots. Of course, you've probably, maybe you haven't, you should see the t-shirt that says something to the effect of "Mass murderers agree, gun control works." And of course, it has photos of Hitler and Stalin and Mao. Finally, Ron Paul points out again on the Econo Crash, he hits all the tips, of course. International Central Bank. Gun control. But printing money only prolongs the pain. And, of course, we've heard many other people say that, of course, the feds, the banksters, are only doing more of the same that caused us problems in the first place in our phony-ass fake economy that's now crashing on purpose. They're going to do more of the same. Print more money. Type more zeros and ones. Derivatives. Schemes. Credit default swaps. Illegal bankster bullshit. Jumping to the 9/11 subheading. Updates. This is one I could spend a whole episode on. And unfortunately, again, I'll point out, just as I blitz through all this news, I don't do it justice. I can't do all this insanity justice for you. I wish I could make like my man Richard Grove made early on in the 9/11 synchronicity podcast. He was busting out sometimes. It was a little much, but 6 hour long podcasts full of, you know, uncut clips and massive. So there are times where I feel like I may just do that at some point. I'll just make a monthly massive 7 hour long podcast for you. But until that starts to happen, I'm just going to keep blitzing through headlines for you, my friends, and tell you to please go check it out for yourself. All the links are there. All the research is there for the taking. You just got to take it. You got to want it. All the 9/11 updates. Jesus Christ. Newly discovered, or at least newly noticed, video from Fox News 5 out of D.C., where, of course, they reported that World Trade Center Building 7 collapsed before it did. And so that's at least our third clip. Remember, we've got the BBC and Jane Stanley. We've got Aaron Brown on CNN. And now we've got Fox News 5 out of D.C., all at least 5, 10, even 20 minutes before Building 7 collapsed, on the air saying, Building 7 has collapsed, the Solomon Brothers building. And, of course, it's standing behind them. And in this new Fox clip from D.C., it falls as they're watching it live and go, oh, yeah, there it goes now. SEC FOIA request response for WTC records bibliography. Of course, from 911blogger.com, as many of these are. From thinkprogress.org, however, after 9/11, Rove pressured the entertainment industry to produce propaganda. And we'll get into a little bit of that in just a little bit. Gainesville talk radio host supports 9/11 truth. Rescue Me to feature 9/11 conspiracy plot. And there's video to go along with this. Dennis Leary's firefighter show is going to take on 9/11 conspiracy theories. Of course, one of the stars of this show, Daniel Sunjata, is a huge supporter of 9/11 truth. There's a video and a little addendum to the fantastic documentary, The Elephant in the Room, which we focused on a few months ago, along with Jason Burmes' new documentary, Fabled Enemies, as well as Save the Brave. But there's a new shorty called Baby Elephant. There's a nice clip of the guys from NIST, of course, admitting that Building 7 fell at free fall speed. Tying into the Mumbai false flag attacks, the former ISI chief, remember that's Pakistan's CIA that was set up by our CIA, their former ISI chief says that Mumbai and 9/11 were both, quote, inside jobs. So another example of a world leader saying, of course, these big terror events are state-sponsored terror. Alleged 9/11 conspirators will confess and plead guilty. That's from Wikinews. They're going to offer confessions. That's from the Deutsche Press Agency. Jonathan Turley notes on Raw Story, and there's a video for you, that there's a strange alliance between Bush and the 9/11 mastermind, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, KSM. Of course, those tortured patsies are going to confess to 9/11. Again, ex-ISI chief Hamid Ghul, G-U-L, exposes 9/11 as inside job. Massive updates to historycommons.org, complete 9/11 timeline as of December 8th. There's tons of new entries on the day of 9/11 and Londonistan. There's a local article about a guy whose new movie conjures up a 9/11 conspiracy theory from MainlineTimes.com. LM Native's movie thriller conjures up a 9/11 conspiracy, and it's called Able Danger. And finally, importantly, of course, the 9/11 families protest the fairness of the Guantanamo trials, of course, saying they're unfair and un-American. Tortured patsies confessing to whatever the fuck you want them to confess to. I heard Mike Malloy last night, at least, fortunately, pointing out on Air America that these are, of course, long-time techniques, and we were so up in arms when they were doing it to us in the 50s in North Korea. And, of course, that just leads into Manchurian candidates. But I'll leave that alone for the moment. The final subheading on the news purge, Info Overload, World War III Watch. With a WMD attack likely, can the U.S. cope? There's a lot of talk, a lot of fear, a lot of pulpit pounding about we're just not prepared for a bio attack. They're prepping us for bioterror. And of course, I don't even have it posted up yet. There were mysterious envelopes that showed up at some governmental offices. But yeah, from ABC News, with a WMD attack likely, can the U.S. cope? Depression signs, JFCOM, hotel security and missile defense from Daily Dose of Terror, five Blackwater guards charged for Iraq massacre, Gingrich says Israel should set deadline for attack on Iran, Supreme Court agrees to hear case of the only enemy combatant held in America, the Israeli auto kill zone is locked and loaded, U.S. shoots down missile in a simulated attack. Missile sims, simulation, future combat systems, space war. Pentagon expanding the number of foreigners recruited. That's from the Associated Press. And of course, that goes along with him hiring convicted felons and gangbangers. Because foreigners and convicted felons and gangbangers won't give a fuck about shooting your grandma. I gotta get what's mine, bitch. Washington Times, Blackwater guards, all decorated vets, of course, the ones that are charged for murder in Iraq, the ones we know about. New tensions in Jerusalem's Arab neighborhood, of course, nice photos of Israeli soldiers dragging women and children through the dirt. Thousands protest Stephen Harper in Toronto with protests in Canada, of course, as we mentioned last week, Harper's basically closed parliament. Freedom's Watch has also officially closed. Of course, the little neocon think tank with Ari Fleischer. World government and Raytheon missile defense, economic peril, DHS Hollywood, GMD and PMC updates from Daily Dose of Terror. Computer malware, the new weapon of mass destruction. That's from Threat Level, again, prepping us for what I think. Whatever the next massive attack is in the States, the 9/11 to be, as Captain Eric May would call it, it's gotta be a combo of the Econo crash, bioterror, and something with the web. That's what I think. The Illuminati Georgia Guidestones were vandalized in Georgia, and there's a lot of photos that someone basically spray-painted all over the mysterious, creepy Georgia Guidestones that basically lay out a eugenics New World Order constitution. We're basically vandalized with fuck the New World Order. Fuck you, eugenicists. So you should check out those photos. Greek violence flares for the sixth day. And finally, even more from Daily Dose of Terror, Bioterror Scare, China-Russia War Games, and Lockheed Martin. That, my friends, is the massive news purge information overload. And again, as I said, I can't do it justice. I sometimes just have to post it all up. It's on the record. It's there. I've archived it. It's saved. It's not a conspiracy. But is it mind control? Interestingly enough, at the top of the show, we heard Common, and of course Pharrell of Nerd and Neptunes, with the title track from Common's new record, Universal Mind Control. And of course, how CNN's quoting Common as saying, Obama's going to change hip-hop. Here's my song, Mind Control. Interestingly enough, someone else, his name's Stephen Marley, one of the Sons of Bob, he has a new record. Guess what it's called? Mind Control.
Operation Northwoods, and it was on a table that our military would attack certain cities within the United States and make it look like Cuba did it to justify an invasion of Cuba.
So the idea was to have U.S. personnel from the CIA and other places secretly create terrorism in the United States. The documents actually said people would be shot on American streets, bombs would be blown up. And again, all this, the evidence would be laid to point the finger at Castro.
The federal government proposed blowing up airliners full of Americans, saying that casualty lists in U.S. newspapers would cause a helpful wave of indignation.
They had a very complex plan where they were going to take an aircraft and load it with CIA people that looked like college students, have it take off from an airport in Miami with a lot of publicity, and then it would quickly, after it got into the air, land at a secret CIA base. At that same time, an identical plane would take off from that CIA base, except this plane would be empty, and it would be remotely piloted from ground. It was a drone plane that would be very similar to the passenger plane that had just taken off.
But Sid would want to hijack their remote control, crash them, and blame it on the Soviet Union and Cuba. Now, that was decades ago.
If they would do it in the 60s, they'll do it again.
It never got put into effect, but the fact that you can get all the members of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the senior military officials in the U.S. government, signing off on a plan that outrageous was extraordinary.
In the plan, they elaborated on how they could bomb Washington, D.C. and blame it on Cuba. Attack Marines at Guantanamo Bay using U.S. Army soldiers dressed up as Cubans, or they said, just like the sinking of the Maine to get into the Spanish-American War, we could blow up a ship again. Here they are admitting the problem reaction solution system and how effective it is to motivate the American people to get them behind a war.
There you have Operation Northwoods, the declassified plan to stage false flag terror within the United States, turned down by Kennedy, fired his chief of staff, and you know where that got him. That's a cool little short video. I wouldn't have used the blaring Mission Impossible music, but hey. CTC 411 up on YouTube, Operation Northwoods Exposed, and you heard Alex Jones, Jesse Ventura, and James Bamford all talking about Operation Northwoods. We're well into hour number two of episode 103 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster, coming to you from the Portland Radio Authority, PRARadio.org, and RevereRadioNetwork.com, 93.9 KBFR in Boulder, and Ground Zero Radio in Atlanta. It's starting to rain, and it looks a little big and heavy, and it's 41 degrees, and we're supposed to get snow. So I see it starting to come down outside. So winter in America is upon us. And as I glance to Google News, ice storm leaves hundreds of thousands without power in New York and the New England areas. However, returning to our regularly scheduled program on MediaMonarchy.com, Illuminati cyber squatters made a killing over the Bush Library website. This from Raw Story. Damn those internets. President Bush's presidential library lost their domains to cyber squatters, and the company charged with developing the website was forced to pay $35,000 to get it back. The squatters, a North Carolina company called Illuminati Karate, leveraged the domain that the presidential library let expire into a sweet five-figure sum after an embarrassing report in a Dallas newspaper that they'd lost the donation. Illuminati's return on the investment was 3,500%. They paid $10 for the domain. Illuminati Karate paid less than $10 for the www.georgewbushlibrary.com domain name and sold it back for $35,000. To the library's contracted web developers, Yuma Solutions, who had accidentally let it expire, of course, the Dallas Morning News reported last Thursday. Illuminati Karate recognized what the library obviously knew as well, that anything else, like GWPresidentialLibrary.com, would have been cumbersome and less than ideal. It worked out very well, said Huger, lead web developer for Illuminati Karate in Raleigh, North Carolina, told the paper. Mark Mills, the owner of Yuma Solutions, could not be reached for comment. They can never be reached for comment. Damn it. So, of course, anytime you see the term Illuminati, you go, what are you talking about? Oh, it's just a funny name for your internet company. It's funny. The New World Order's funny. The Real News has a nice report. Again, we're going to return to The Real News and great economist Peter Schiff, who, of course, as we went over last week, when he was talking about the Federal Reserve printing more money, making things worse. Oh, his feed was lost from CNN International. Here's a quick clip, however, of him on The Real News talking about the next depression.
With a financial bailout total now in excess of $8 trillion and no end to the crisis in sight, many economic experts are warning of a nearing depression. In an internal memo regarding the unprecedented moves global financial authorities are making, Citigroup's chief technical strategist said, they are throwing the kitchen sink at this. The world is not going back to normal after the magnitude of what they have done. One particularly outspoken economist, Peter Schiff, is claiming that the U.S. dollar will plunge in value due to hyperinflation. The Real News spoke to him from his company headquarters in Connecticut.
Hyperinflation ultimately results when the demand for money collapses, where confidence is lost in money, and people won't hold it. Because paper money intrinsically is worthless, and the confidence can go away. When the confidence goes away, the buying power goes away. History is replete with examples of hyperinflation. It is not uncommon. It is something that generally happens with a paper currency. When the money is just a piece of paper, it's very easy for the public to lose confidence, especially when the government is printing too much of it, which is what's happening in our economy. The government is trying to create additional consumer spending, and they're trying to do it by printing money. Given what the government is doing, we're facing depression, an inflationary depression. If the government was not making the problem worse, then we would be facing something far less drastic. But even if the government did all the right things, which is basically allowing the market to work, the resolution of years of reckless spending would not come without pain. What's happening today is not the problem. What we are living through are the consequences of the problem. The problem was that we blew all our money, that we borrowed and spent ourselves into bankruptcy. And we allowed this phony economy, this service sector economy, to replace the industrial economy we once had. But it's not viable. It was only viable temporarily because we were able to borrow money from the rest of the world to make it work.
As of November 19th, the total U.S. federal debt was $10.6 trillion, adding unfunded Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, veteran pensions, and similar obligations. This figure rises to over $53 trillion of debt, or roughly $500,000 per American household.
Bailouts are bullshit. That's essentially what economist Peter Schiff, as well as numerous other economists who know what the fuck is going on, have said. And that's what I've said. And I barely have an idea of what the fuck's going on. But let's switch wildly, my friends. Possession prediction, Bush and the Bible. This from KPRC as well as WAPT. This is out of Mississippi. Was high school girl possessed? Students at a Mississippi high school said a fellow student spoke in tongues and made grave predictions for her classmates for 3 days. Some of those predictions included when students would die.
And new at 10, was a high school student possessed by the devil or a vessel for God? That's the debate surrounding a Pilahatchee High School student. For 3 days this week, students say the girl spoke in tongues and made grave predictions about her classmates. 16 WAPT's Joseph Pleasant went to Pilahatchee today to get answers. He's back now. Joseph.
Joyce, some of those predictions included when students would die. Pilahatchee High School students called our newsroom convinced an evil spirit to go over the girl. Tonight we talked to students and the girl at the center of this debate.
Oh, yeah, it was disturbing to a lot of students.
This week, one of Rob Sparks' classmates came to school in tears. She was speaking in a deep voice, sometimes speaking in tongues. Sparks says the girl told students about little-known facts in their past and made predictions on how some of them would die.
It made a lot of people cry and stuff and leave school and haven't returned yet.
Sparks and his classmates think an evil spirit possessed the girl. They were so convinced Sparks and his friends brought Bibles to school and held a devotional.
Some believe, some don't, but they say it's the devil, but the devil only tells lies. Everything I said was true.
Lysandra Clinton admits she spoke in tongues and made predictions for her classmates, but she says it was God speaking through her, not the devil.
I didn't cuss anybody out. If it was a demon, I would have told that school, look, I would have threw this, everything. Yeah. But I said no cuss word at all.
Pilahatchee school officials wouldn't comment, but Lysandra's mother told us the school had counselors and a youth pastor talk to her daughter. She believes God is using her daughter to touch students at Pilahatchee High School.
They said they didn't know what to do. They didn't know how to handle the problem. You know, and they really didn't come up with a solution.
Rob's father is unsure what to believe about Lysandra's experience, but he says school officials should have told parents about what happened. Instead, they heard it from their children.
It disrupted class, you know, I think could have done it a little bit better, yeah.
Lysandra continues to go to class. She says God hasn't spoken through her since Wednesday.
Lysandra's mother says the school didn't punish her daughter, though they warned her if she disrupts class, they'll send her home. Meanwhile, around town, and especially in Pilahatchee's churches, folks are debating if Lysandra is delivering messages from God, from the devil, or any spirit at all.
Dovetailing with that nicely, of course, from ABC News and The Telegraph and Raw Story and APB News and The Washington Times and on and on and on. Bush says that the Bible's probably not true.
So, do you believe that God actually intervenes in human affairs?
I'm not so presumptuous as to act on, as to kind of be God, I guess is the way to say it. In other words, it's one I get asked all the time. Well, if you're religious, therefore you must think that you were picked out of all the people on the face of the earth to become president. I can't go there. And I'm not that confident in knowing, the Almighty to be able to say, yeah, God wanted me of all the other people. But, you know, did God want me to be president? I don't know. My relationship is on a personal basis, trying to become as closer to the Almighty as I possibly can get. And I've got a lot of problems. I mean, I've got, you know, ego. I've got all the things that, anxieties and all the things that prevent me from being closer to the Almighty. So I don't analyze my relationship with the good Lord in terms of, well, you know, God has plucked you out or God wants you to do this. Or I know this. I know that the call is to better understand and live out your life according to the will of God.
So how do you know? I mean, does God talk to you all? Or I don't mean like, well, I don't know what I mean.
I don't hear voices. It's like somebody said, you see the Lincolns go to in the White House. I said, no, I've been drinking. But no, even a thoughtful prayer life and one that genuinely is open and thoughtful. Yes, you can commune with God. Now, I don't hear voices, but I do feel the Spirit.
People of faith throughout the ages have wondered about this. How do they know when it's their own ego, when it's their own desires, and when it's actually God's
will? I think that's one universal question. I think one way you make sure it's not your ego is you stay in the Bible. At least that's what I have found. And I'm still learning. The Bible is an amazing book.
Is it literally true, the Bible?
Probably not. I'm not a literalist, but I think you can learn a lot from it.
So you can read the Bible and not take it literally. I mean, you can, it's not inconsistent to love the Bible and to also believe in evolution, say.
Well, I think you can have both. I think evolution can be a lot. You're getting way out of my lane here, but I'm just a simple president. But it's, I think that God created the earth, created the world. I think that the creation of the world is so mysterious it requires something as large as an Almighty. And I don't think it's incompatible with, you know, the scientific proof that there's evolution.
President Bush won both of his terms with the broad support of evangelicals and conservative Christian voters, but in a recent interview, he says that he doesn't take the Bible literally and that creationism and evolution are compatible. has raised more than a few eyebrows in the last couple of days, as you can imagine. And joining me now to talk more about this and the president's face, CNN contributor and CBN Christian Broadcasting Network correspondent David Brody. David, good to see you this morning. Let's listen to a little bit about what the president said. It was in an interview with Cynthia McFadden on Nightline on Monday.
All right.
Is it literally true, the Bible?
I mean, probably not. You know, I mean, the idea that... I know I'm not a literalist, but I think you can learn a lot from it.
Is it literally true, the Bible? Probably not. Are you surprised?
Well, sure, and I think a lot of social conservative evangelicals are surprised, probably grabbing the smelling salts, you know, as we speak, trying to revive them from the floor. I mean, also, it was the way he said it, probably not, as in, well, hello, it's the Holy Bible. So, you know, clearly there were some problems there regarding social conservative evangelicals and the way President Bush spoke. You know, it's interesting, that, John, though, that he always had the Jesus story, though, and that has been the crucial aspect to all of this. Barack Obama had the Jesus story, and John McCain not only didn't want to talk about anything to have to do with Jesus, but he didn't even want to bring up faith at all. And that seemed to make a difference in this campaign, and it helped George Bush a while back.
What about this idea of creationism and evolution and how they can coexist in the president's mind? What was the line that he was walking there?
Well, it's interesting, because if you go into the debate about creation and evolution, you get into microevolution and macroevolution. Macroevolution is obviously the controversy. It may have been microevolution where George Bush was going here. In other words, there are many creationists who also believe in a smaller form, if you will, of microevolution, and that seems to be compatible with the Bible. The problem was the president didn't seem all that, if you want to use the word, coherent on the subject, and I think it just raised a lot more questions in many people's minds.
So it's this idea that people can believe in intelligent design in terms of the overall creation of beings and the earth, but then small amounts of evolution took place over the however many years, 6,000
right.
in some people's minds, or 4 billion in other people's minds. All right, you said in your article writing about this, quote, talking about President Bush, at least he doesn't have to worry about winning the socially conservative base anymore, because with comments like that, he'd have to go into damage control mode. I covered the 2000-2004 campaigns. I know how something like this would have gone over.
Amazing little nuggets of reality dribbling out from Shrub in his remaining days and weeks in office. Bush says the Bible's probably not literally true. And there's tons of links and more for you to check out in that story. Also, of course, about the possessed girl. I believe there's also a link that goes in somewhat connectedly about post-apocalyptic fiction. But we're going to shift to the military entertainment complex, musical torture, and more. From Danger Room, Military Entertainment Complex expands, Creative Technologies Incorporated, the Hollywood-based company that grew out of the Army's gaming lab at USC, is pairing up with defense megalith Boeing. Of course, sponsoring the zoo lights at the Oregon Zoo currently. Brought to you by Boeing. Creative Technologies Incorporated joining forces with Boeing to collaborate on a new simulation technology for land forces. Among other things, the Army wants technology to help cannoneers stay in practice. According to the news release announcing the partnership, with a link for you, of course, the companies may explore field artillery simulation for soldiers who are in the field or home between deployments. That's particularly important these days. In Iraq, many field artillery units have been handed convoy duty, civil affairs, and military police missions. And Army leaders have been worried about erosion of high-end combat skills if artillery crews can't spend more time on the gunnery ranges. This also looks like a timely business move. As noted by Danger Room earlier, the Army has launched a $50 million push to develop video games that will help prepare troops for combat. This builds on the service's interest in using video games as a recruiting tool. Of course, remember, America's Army. And of course, Army Training and Doctrine Command even has an office for gaming. Moving to the Washington Post in a story, a follow-up that Media Monarchy brought you back in May of this year. Homeland Stupidity Goes Hollywood, a new reality show focused on the agencies and employees of Homeland Security, is sure to find fans among bureaucrats and department observers, and is also likely to draw some criticism from those who wonder if a primetime television show is the best use of the agency's time. Homeland Security USA debuts January 6th on ABC. The show's producer, Arn Shapiro, creator of the CBS reality hit Big Brother, which means that he stole it from European television, recently told The Hollywood Reporter, "I love investigative journalism, but that's not what we're doing. This show is heartening. It makes you feel good about these people who are doing their best to protect us." So while the show will highlight the main missions of the department's 218,000 employees, it likely will not focus on less flattering incidents like, of course, the DHS official arrested for hiring illegal immigrants, which we already noted, and, of course, the department's challenges with government contracting or the inability to, or rather the inability of airport screeners to unionize. I would say that's the least of their inabilities. It's a combination of the two most popular shows on TV, Cops and 24. That, of course, wraps it up from David Heyman, director and senior fellow of Homeland Security Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, CSIS.org. And again, the flashback for you, back to May of this year, when the show was originally called Border Security USA. So that's the link from MediaMonarchy.com, Border Security USA reality show from Big Brother. Now to an important and disturbing story of the last week that has a lot of artists and musicians up in arms. Who thought you'd see Rage Against the Machine and Sesame Street together? But here it is from Think Progress and Military.com and the Associated Press. Interrogators played Christina Aguilera, Sesame Street, and the Barney theme song to torture detainees. One of the Bush administration's psychological torture techniques against detainees has been to blast loud music to deprive detainees of sleep, causing some to, quote, knock their heads against the walls and doors, screaming their heads off. According to British human rights group reprieve.org.uk, these are among the songs that the U.S. has used frequently. Dirty by Christina Aguilera, Fuck Your God by Deicide, Shoot to Thrill by AC/DC, We Are the Champions by Queen, I Love You from Barney and Friends, Born in the USA by Bruce Springsteen, Babylon by David Gray, White America by Eminem, the Sesame Street theme song, and more from Aerosmith, Britney Spears, Don McLean, Lil' Kim, Limp Bizkit, Matchbox 20, Rage Against the Machine, Red Hot Chili Peppers, and Tupac Shakur. Reprieve has launched a new anti-music torture initiative called Zero DB. And again, you can read more from The Guardian. And there's also, fortunately, a clip from Raw Story and CNN where Donald Vance, a former Camp Cropper detainee, talks about music as torture.
A group of musicians is protesting today about the use of their music as a torture device in U.S. military prisons. Members of the band Rage Against the Machine and a composer who wrote songs for Sesame Street are going to be part of the protest. Well, one man who was held in a military prison talks about what he went through.
A lot of nine-inch nails. I couldn't begin to tell you how many times I heard Queen's We Will Rock You. I could hear what they were saying, and they're usually calling out for their mothers or calling out God to help them. You can hear someone going insane.
A military spokesperson says that she would not give details on how the music was used at detention centers, but that it is not used today. The band Drowning Pool says that it is happy that one of their songs is on the interrogation top 40 list.
Of course, lunkhead douchebags Drowning Pool and their song Bodies, they're big fans of the military-industrial complex and the War of Terror, and we've seen their song Let the Bodies Hit the Floor being used by military guys to get them fucking pumped up to kill those brown motherfuckers that hit us on 9/11. Music as torture. Jumping to the latest from collateralnews.tv, and of course, youtube.com/collateralnews, one of my favorite subscriptions, up on youtube.com/media monarchy. It looks like this story won the votes. If you'll remember, several weeks back, Collateral News had a clip where they focused on three stories and invited people to vote on which one they wanted covered. I voted, and I voted for this story, and it is the most important. Riot brigades. What happens in these uncertain times if social unrest were to become an issue in the United States? You may not have thought much about it, but the Pentagon has. planning to deploy 20,000 specially trained soldiers nationwide.
When you take a look at the social landscape, it seems obvious that a lot of people are going to need financial help pretty soon, not just auto executives and investment bankers. But if things get really bad and the forthcoming help is inadequate, people may grow desperate and social unrest may increase. What do you think will happen then? You might not be thinking about it, but the Pentagon is. Welcome to Collateral.
Hello.
It's me. Turn on the TV.
Hang on.
The Senate remained in emergency session late into the night, debating the president's call for martial law. We have, in this country, a tradition of invoking martial law only when the most dire of circumstances require it. But at what cost?
Last week, the Pentagon announced plans to deploy 20,000 uniformed and armed U.S. troops inside the U.S. by the year 2011. According to the Army Times, the soldiers will learn how to help with civil unrest, crowd control, or to deal with potentially horrific scenarios such as massive poisoning and chaos in response to a chemical, biological, radiological, or nuclear attack. The soldiers will use, quote, the first ever non-lethal package that the Army has fielded designed to subdue unruly or dangerous individuals without killing them, unquote. Democracy Now! Interviewed a military public affairs officer who called the overall mission humanitarian, and the sycophant corporate press has tried to cast the move as business as usual, but this is new. This marks the first time an active military unit will be deployed inside the U.S. under federal control. First 4,700 of these troops, the 3rd Infantry Division's 1st Brigade Combat Team, started training in October. The full force of 20,000 would be deployed fresh off a scheduled overseas combat deployment in 2010. So in 2 or 3 years from now, a force of 20,000 soldiers straight out of combat will then be deployed as a security force stateside?
The president made you put tanks on the Brooklyn Bridge? I'm questioning my patriotism. I'm questioning your judgment.
Since the end of the Civil War, deployment of military inside the U.S. has been prohibited under the Posse Comitatus Act. But now, Section 1076 of the John Warner Defense Authorization Act expands the president's ability to deploy troops within the U.S. for the purposes of law enforcement. Because it does this without the consent of the state's governor, what the act effectively does is make it much easier for the president to declare martial law. And those aren't just our words. Those are the words of Senator Patrick Leahy after reviewing the provision. This is more shock doctrine at work. An entirely foreseeable economic calamity sends U.S. states careening to the edge of a financial cliff. In their weakened state, an initiative like this is rammed through, marketed as relief for beleaguered states. But what it really is a dangerous concentration of power in the executive branch.
Good morning. Today, with the invocation of the War Powers Act by the President, I am declaring a state of martial law in this city.
Now, no one thinks that martial law is going to be declared just because a few thousand troops are deployed stateside. But it's the precedent that matters. It starts with 4,700 troops. Then it goes up to 20,000 troops within 2 months. What's to say it'll stop there? When you have a lapdog corporate press and a fear-mongering environment in which the military is repeatedly glorified, well, then the Pentagon can plausibly deny that using force against U.S. citizens is part of the plan. Well, they can deny it right up to the moment that the guns are pointed at U.S. citizens. Then it'll be too late.
Collateral News, riot brigades, always good work from them. And of course, you heard clips from the Hollywood blockbuster, The Siege. Last couple stories that we're going to get into on this episode 103 of MediaMonarchy.com. A sad, alarming story with an interesting end, if it's the end. F-18 crashes into residential neighborhood in San Diego. This initial report from the Associated Press. An F-18 crashed into a residential neighborhood in San Diego, sparking at least one house fire. Footage from the scene showed columns of white smoke rising from a housing development. Federal Aviation Administration spokesman Ian Gregor said the plane crashed shortly before noon on Monday as it prepared to land at Marine Corps Air Station Miramar. The crash occurred 2 miles from the base, and FAA spokesman Gregor said the pilot ejected. And again, Associated Press, AFP, BBC, you can link to the Miramar website as well as Wikinews. Now, some of the updates on this story. And again, anytime the military crashes and blows up neighborhoods, it's always important to take a look. Some of the updates, and again, just the basic Marine jet crashes in San Diego houses from Danger Room, as well as the Deutsche Press Agency. Rescuers recovered a fourth victim from the California crash site, again from the AFP. The two most recent updates before I get to the clip and the unbelievable clip and the interview of the man whose family was killed in the crash. If we hit up military.com and a report from the Associated Press, senators push probe of the F-18 fleet. Dateline, of course, San Diego. California's two U.S. senators want the Marine Corps to review its entire fleet of F-18 Hornet jets for possible problems after one of their jets crashed into a home and killed two young girls, their mother and their grandmother. In a joint letter Wednesday, Senators Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein asked General James Conway, Marine Commandant, to quickly complete the investigation of Monday's crash and make the results public. We can all agree that in urban areas like San Diego County, where the military and civilian populations closely coexist, it's absolutely vital that all precautionary steps are taken to ensure the safety of both our civilian and military residents, the letters read. And again, that seems to dovetail nicely with the previous clip from Collateral News about the riot brigades on the streets. So, civilians and military residents coexisting. And again, since when are we referred to as civilians? The semantics of it have all changed. So now you're a civilian. You ain't military. You're a civilian. You ain't cop. You're little people. Another one from the Associated Press on military.com, Marines defend pre-crash decisions. This is Dateline Washington. Marine Corps generals on Thursday, that's yesterday, defended the decision to direct a jet pilot over a crowded San Diego neighborhood after an engine on his F-18 Hornet failed. It couldn't be predicted that the second engine on the jet also would fail, forcing the pilot to eject, and bringing the aircraft down onto a two-story home where it killed four people, the general said at a closed congressional briefing. This according to Representative and former presidential candidate Duncan Hunter, Repug out of California, and others who attended. In the wake of Monday's crash, some have questioned why the jet didn't divert toward a coastal air station instead of continuing over neighborhoods towards Marine Corps Air Station Miramar. A number of factors made Miramar the right call at the time, according to the briefers, and we'll just see. So, lastly, and again we'll hear the initial breaking news clip, as well as the unbelievable clip of the man Dong Yun Yung, D-O-N-G-Y-U-N-Y-O-O-N. His whole family was killed in the F-18 crash, but he says, hey, no hard feelings.
Just got a report from the Navy saying that, in fact, that the pilot was recovered safely, and this was the Marine Squadron VMF AT-101. Shep, I have another line in my ear. I think they've switched the wrong IFB, but I can report that the pilot was recovered safely. We just spoke to a Navy spokesman.
I actually said switch the wrong IFB, meaning the control room that puts my voice into her ear has been switched around, so she can't hear us at the moment. Some nice close-up pictures now from KGTV in San Diego, which is showing us the work that first responders are doing there on the ground. They were able to get this thing out. PDQ, really, it happened just moments before noon, so moments before 2 o'clock Central Time, and we've been watching ever since. We know that at least two cars have burned and the house on fire as well, and William LaJeunesse, It, from the proximity to that field nearby, one could guess, and only that until we hear from the pilot himself, but one could guess that he was trying to avoid a neighborhood altogether and almost made it.
Yeah, Shepard, you know, my recollection is that this Miramar Air Station was actually partially recommended for closure under the Base Closure Commission, you remember, a few years ago, because putting a base was basically incompatible with the density of the neighborhood that really emerged because the Planning Commission failed to keep these houses away from that facility. It happens in these growing areas in the Southwest. You see all that cheap land available, and pretty soon it's houses. And that's obviously to prevent the kind of thing from happening that we see right here. That's one of the reasons I believe the squadron from the Top Gun school actually moved to Nevada because, the complaints on the amount of jet traffic in there. But clearly this pilot was probably trying to make that airfield. Something went wrong with this F-18 and he had to bail out. I'm sure there's going to be a lengthy investigation. But as I said, just 2 years ago, they had almost the same kind of incident with a F-18 Hornet crash landing in an area field just shy of the airfield or of the airstrip itself.
A San Diego man is grieving for his family, lost when a Marine fighter jet crashed into a residential neighborhood on Monday. Marcella Lee of our San Diego station, KFMB, reports.
Overcome with unthinkable grief, Dong Yun Yoon found it difficult to even walk, leaning on his pastor for support. He pointed to the place where his house once stood, the home he left Monday morning, never imagining it would be the last time he would see his wife, mother-in-law, and two baby girls.
I cannot believe that they are not here right now. I just miss her so much.
He spoke of his two daughters. Their grandmother, seen here, had flown in from Korea to help care for her grandkids. Yoon bearing the guilt of his family's loss, but not blaming the pilot of the F-A-18.
I don't blame him. I don't have any hard feelings. I know he did everything good.
Ironically, Yoon was silenced several times by the loud roar of military jets flying over the neighborhood, a painful reminder of the tragedy that has left Yoon wondering how he'll find strength to go on.
But I know there are many people who have experienced more terrible things. Please tell me how to do it, because I don't know what to do.
Marcella Lee for CBS News.
Wow. Did you hear what he said? I hope my father-in-law doesn't blame me, isn't upset with me.
And the other thing that was so interesting to me, reading the transcripts of his entire press conference, he does not have any ill will or ill feeling toward the pilot. He says, I hope this man understands he's a hero as far as I'm concerned and that he doesn't feel guilt about what happened. Phenomenal attitude to be able to maintain that kind of composure in light of what just happened to him.
He just wants to know how to get through it, especially during holidays.
That's a really disturbing story. As you listen to the clip, and again, they even note it, the guy can't even do his thing for TV news cameras without you still hearing the military jets flying overhead. So regardless, Yoon is an amazingly strong individual, and either he is the most zen, forgiving master in the world, or he's in a complete state of shock. And he's probably correct. No, don't blame the pilot. Again, he was directed to keep flying that way from the base that probably shouldn't be there anyway. So that's an F-18 crashing in San Diego and killing four people. Another obituary note, but this one more on the media murder monarchy kind of tip. Eris von Bülow has died after 28 years in a coma. This initially from the Associated Press. Martha Sunny von Bülow, an heiress who spent the last 28 years of her life in oblivion after what prosecutors alleged in a pair of sensational trials were two murder attempts by her husband. She died last Saturday at the age of 76. Sunny von Bülow died at a nursing home in New York, her children said in a statement issued by family spokeswoman Maureen Connolly. Martha von Bülow was the personification of romantic notions about high society, a stunning heiress who brought her American millions to marriages with men who gave her honored old European names. but she ended her days in a coma, showing no sign of awareness that she was visited by her children and tended around the clock by nurses. In the 1980s, she was the offstage presence that haunted her husband's two sensational trials in Newport and Providence, Rhode Island. At the first trial in 1982, Klaus von Bülow was convicted of trying twice to kill her by injection with insulin at their estate in Newport, Rhode Island. That verdict was thrown out on appeal, and he was acquitted at a second trial in 1985. The media note, the murder case split Newport society, producing lurid headlines, and of course was later made into the film Reversal of Fortune with Glenn Close and Jeremy Irons.
They were the cream of high society in the 1980s. She, a wealthy American heiress with an estimated fortune of $25 to $40 million. He, a socialite and lawyer who was born in Denmark. But the opulent world of the von Bülows came crashing down in 1980 when Sunny, as she was known, was found unconscious on the bathroom floor of the couple's mansion in Newport, Rhode Island. Her death was determined as murder.
The clandestine, subtle, and ingenious attempt part of her husband, Klaus von Bülow, to terminate her life.
The 1982 trial that followed caused a sensation. Sunny von Bülow's children from her first marriage accused Klaus von Bülow of killing her. Prosecutors claimed that Klaus von Bülow had twice tried to murder his wife by injecting her with insulin. But defense lawyers said Sunny von Bülow was a pill-popping alcoholic who drank herself into a coma. Klaus von Bülow was initially convicted of murder, but the verdict was reversed on appeal, and at a second trial in 1985, Mr. von Bülow was acquitted.
Sunny von Bülow dead after 28 years in a coma. Lastly, on this episode 103 of Media Monarchy, as the late, great, one and only Bill Hicks would call a positive drug story, former drug officer launches Cop Busters TV show from Raw Story. Barry Cooper, a former Texas police officer with 8 years of specialty in drug interdiction, first made waves when he released the film Never Get Busted Again, a how-to guide for evading police drug seizures. Austin, Texas-based Cooper's latest project is not nearly so benign and will likely generate for the former drug warrior an army of enemies in law enforcement. Cop Busters, that's one word with a K. Cop Busters is a reality TV program that aims to sink crooked officers. Cop Busters rented a house in Odessa, Texas, and began growing two small Christmas trees under a grow light similar to those used for growing marijuana. When faced with a suspected marijuana grow, the police usually use illegal FLIR cameras, forward-looking infrared, F-L-I-R. The police usually use illegal FLIR cameras and or lie on the search warrant, claiming they have probable cause to raid the house. Instead of conducting a proper investigation, which usually leads to no probable cause, the cops lie on the affidavit claiming a confidential informant saw the plants and or the police could smell marijuana coming from the suspected house. The trap was set, and less than 24 hours later, the Odessa Narcotics Unit raided the house only to find Copbusters attorneys waiting under a system of complex gadgetry and spy cameras that streamed live online to the Copbusters' secret mobile office nearby. The attorney was handcuffed and later released when 11 Copbuster detectives arrived with the media in tow to question the illegal raid. The police, of course, refused to give Copbusters the search warrant affidavit, which is suspected to contain lies regarding the probable cause. It's not illegal to grow plants under a light in your home, but it is illegal to lie on an affidavit or to plant drugs on citizens. Cooper's Never Get Busted Again, the original project, was, of course, a runaway success, and it's broken up into many parts on YouTube. Never Get Busted Again. And so we're going to hear the local Texas news report and then a little clip where Barry Cooper, former anti-drug officer, really lets us know what's up with the drug war. It's Cop Busters.
We finally get to see the real light shed on the police and get innocent people out of prison.
Yeah. Odessa police raid what they believe is a drug-infested house only to find a shocking surprise. Good evening, everyone. They didn't find any drugs. Instead, they found a poster telling them they were on a reality show called Cop Busters.
Eddie Garcia joins us now live in the newsroom with a story. Eddie, what is Cop Busters and what are they trying to do? Well, Tatum, it's an online reality show that goes around the nation exposing what they say is police corruption. The reason they came to Odessa is because they were asked by a man who says his daughter is falsely imprisoned.
Video cameras, plants masquerading as drugs, and a message are what police found while serving a search warrant today.
The best equipment known to man is what Cop Busters has, and we're going to continue going across America busting these cops.
The reality show team out of Austin has been setting up the fake drug den for 6 months, going through painstaking methods to keep it a secret.
We had to use encrypted emails. We had to use Walmart blow-up cell phones in case our phones were tapped.
But why all the trouble?
Get Yolanda Madden out of prison.
In 2005, Odessa woman Yolanda Madden was convicted of possession of marijuana with the intent to distribute. Now she's serving a 7-year prison sentence.
I can prove absolutely without a doubt she's innocent.
Her father says he's been trying to get a court to retry the case since the conviction.
We had a witness that planted the drugs. He testified in court that he planted the drugs.
Cop Buster says the show exists to help fix the system.
What do you say to the skeptics who might say this is a publicity stunt?
Watch our TV show, Cop Busters, and see the proof to prove they've got crooked cops here.
You may be interested to know that Cooper himself is a former police officer here locally. Odessa police say that this matter is still under investigation, and at this point, they're looking to see if any laws were broken. We will continue to investigate the Yolanda Madden case and bring you any developments as they come around. Live in the newsroom, Eddie Garcia, CBS 7 News.
If you can zoom in on that sticker up on the corner, the rear window, if that is like a DPS, we support DPS troopers sticker, we donate to some kind of law enforcement agency, that is a heavy indicator to pull them over. Any support of law enforcement that they're advertising automatically makes me suspicious. But I'm starting to feel that same adrenaline being released into my body. And that's what kept me going in law enforcement. When you ask a cop, why do you want to be a cop, or why are you being a cop, or why are you working narcotics, our answer always is, I want to help people and I don't want drugs to get into the hands of the kids. That's all bull crap. They're out here doing this because of the adrenaline rush. They're actually drug addicts themselves. If I injected you with adrenaline, certain doses every day and all day long like a cop gets, you would become addicted to that adrenaline and need more and more and more and more of it. That's why we have to elevate ourselves to more dangerous things to get that rush of adrenaline. When you first break out of academy, riding a simple traffic ticket, your hand shakes and you get that adrenaline rush. Well, after 500 times riding tickets, it's no longer a big deal to you. So the next thing, you need disturbance calls to get that same adrenaline rush. Then you need fights. Then you need car chases. And what happens without law enforcement recognizing it, this happened to me, I needed so much adrenaline, the only thing that pumped me up were busting people for narcotics, fights, and car chases. When you find drugs on somebody, you're supposed to handcuff them right then. Well, I would leave the cuffs off of them and say, you're under arrest for possession of cocaine. And give them a chance to run or to fight, because that gave me that adrenaline rush that I needed, because I was addicted to the adrenaline. Interdiction officers, narcotics officers, are not out here to help American people, and they're not out here to keep drugs out of the hands of school kids. Drug dealers are not dealing drugs to your 10-year-old on the playground. For one, 10-year-olds don't have any money. For two, 10-year-olds are not doing the drugs. That's all a government ploy. Oh, they're killing our kids. That's a lie. That's just a good thing to say. That's just a mask to hide behind the cruel and unjust war on drugs. It's absolutely not true. Cops are out here doing this for the fame of it and for the adrenaline rush and for the peer acceptance, because after there's a big drug bust, there's a big party, and that officer is considered a celebrity for that moment.
The drug war is a bullcrap lie. That, according to former drug interdiction officer Barry Cooper, now behind Cop Busters, busting cops, turning the tables. And there are tons of amazing links and updates and videos, like the raw footage of the raid that wasn't really an audio clip to play for you, but it is funny to watch the cops bust in and slowly realize that they're fucked. Couple last updates from two of my favorite talk show hosts, not only because they're in Portland, but because they do great work. And that's, of course, first, Clyde Lewis, featured on episode 100 a few weeks ago of MediaMonarchy.com. His latest episode of The Ground Zero Lounge, The Horseman Cometh. And also Alex Ansari and Outside the Box, episode 180, covering, of course, the economic collapse of the U.S. economy, and of course the global new financial world order that, of course, is leading us to a dark future with American troops on the streets and foreign troops policing our country. But that's going to do it for this jam-packed episode of MediaMonarchy.com. It's episode 103, and it's time, once again, my friends, for the list of creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. Let me clear my throat. Massachusetts Institute of Technology out of Cambridge, Massachusetts, hit me up for my link on Doug Owens and Michael Vail's awesome blacklistednews.com. Army.mil, headquarters USAISC, out of Arizona, googled, "Will America become a monarchy?" Delta Airlines out of Atlanta, Georgia, googled 28th anniversary of John Lennon's murder, and MediaMonarchy.com was amazingly the first Google result on that. Again, I always wonder, my own personal conspiracy theory, if somehow Google gives preference to their own products, because of course, MediaMonarchy is actually MediaMonarchy.blogspot.com. It's a blogger, Google Blogspot blog, and I think they give it special attention. But I'm glad. So, again, Delta Airlines, 28th anniversary of John Lennon's murder, which I went over on last night's B-side episode of 102. So now, of course, there's multiple hours of MediaMonarchy.com, not just the two-hour show that you hear on Portland Radio Authority and Revere Radio Network. I do a B-side from home because there's too much to cram into 2 hours. The United States House of Representatives out of Manassas, Virginia, we're visiting, as was the University of New Mexico's Health Sciences Center out of Albuquerque. They also googled 28th anniversary of John Lennon's murder. The William Morris Agency out of Santa Monica, California, googled the Golden Suicides. That was, of course, the name of the amazing article from Vanity Fair several months ago about Jeremy Blake and Teresa Duncan, the up-and-coming hot art couple who got involved with Scientology and 9/11 conspiracies, and they both killed themselves. Jewish General Hospital out of Montreal, Canada, googled Ewan Cameron, of course, CIA mind control doctor, Ewan Cameron, E-W-A-N Cameron, the memory thief. The DOD, Department of Defense Network Information Center. We're on MediaMonarchy.com reading about the Marine Corps that was arrested, or rather the Marine Corps recruiter that was arrested and accused of sex with a minor, which we went over several months ago. Appalachian State University out of Boone, North Carolina, googled F-18 crash, Alex Jones. The Department of Fisheries and Oceans out of Ontario, reading about Bush okaying grants to preserve Japanese internment camps, because hell, you know, we might need them again. And finally, United Parcel Service, UPS, the UPS man, out of Mahwah, New Jersey. They hit me up from my link on blacklistednews.com about the massive, amazing posting of Project Bluebeam, TV fakery, holographic projections, and audio spotlights. And that's going to do it, my friends, for episode 103 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster, coming to you every week. And I thank you for listening to the show and going through all this with me. Thanks for getting in touch with me again. Like folks, my man Jeff out in New England, or Alex out in Germany. All of you, thank you very much. And again, hit me up, FaceSpace, YouTube, Yahoo, IM, all with Media Monarchy. And we'll keep going through this as it's winter in America. Like my man Webster Tarpley says, get active or get radioactive. Take care.
on with the diary, or whether he did not or not will, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.